in the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Minneapolis departure, Archer 641, Charlie 2000, climbing 3000.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, holding code on 133, ready to take off.
Albert Delta, about 3621, Mike, and it's downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Bottle to throttle.
Oh, bottle to throttle, yes. Bottle to podcast, completely different.
That doesn't count for chair flying, right?
No. All right, let's start some more chair flying. Welcome to episode 36 of the In the Pattern Podcast. This is Chris coming to you from sunny Arizona, basking in 75 to 80 degree temperatures. I cannot believe the rest of my cohorts are freezing their tails off. And unfortunately, I think on this episode, none of us have actually had a chance to actually fly anything. I just haven't had the time, and I think the other guys have kind of been snowed in. We got Brad and John with us tonight. Mark, unfortunately, is not able to make it as of yet. It's possible that he will join us, but not so sure. But we do have Brad and John. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. I've been flying, so I don't know what your problem is. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. He's a warrior. He's taken one for the team.
That's fun to pre-flight in four degrees Fahrenheit and 10-mile-an-hour winds.
Hey, you've got those heaters for a reason. Those preheaters for your airplane. Might as well use them.
Well, yeah, we also have space heaters that we put in the aircraft inside the cockpit.
during the pre-flight and everything, get it toasty, huh?
Yeah, you set it up about an hour ahead of time, and then you. It warms up the avionics and warms up the seats and everything else. Oh, that'll be good.
Very nice. Very nice. And that is Mr. Conway coming to us from the frigid East Coast. How you doing, bud?
Not as frigid, but not too bad.
Yeah.
It's been a little harder for me to get some flying time. It's been a lot of precipitation out here, so either frozen or not. We actually saw some rain recently. It was weird. I didn't know what to do with it, but
man, send it our way. We could use it so bad.
But, it luckily it gave the car a nice little bath, so I didn't have as much salt on it anymore. so I didn't have to go through the car wash, which was nice.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, let's get this thing started, shall we? We don't have too many flights to talk about. Brad has at least one, so let's shoot it over to Brad. What do you got to talk about?
Well, let's see. A couple Sundays ago, I grabbed the Aero and headed out to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which is home of Line and Kugels.
Yes.
For a $100 breakfast. And I don't think I talked about this on the last episode, did I, John?
No.
Okay, good.
And not, I met, not that I'm aware of, because I didn't entirely listen to the last episode. So.
Met a nice guy who was working on his pilot, or had been working on his pilot's license, and had given it up for a while. And he said, "Are you the pilot who just came in on that plane?" I said, "Yeah, I'm the crazy person." And he said, "Oh, that's so great." And we chatted for a little bit, and I was encouraging him to finish off his license because he had kids that were getting older. And I said, "Well, you know, the ultimate reason or excuse to get your pilot's license is so that you can get to see the grandkids." And so he liked that idea.
Way to be an enabler, Brad.
Yeah, that's the thing. I am an enabler. I was supposed to fly today to do some more commercial training, and a combination of weather and a presidential TFR ended up keeping me grounded. We were actually good to go on the TFR front. We were outside of the inner core by about 2 miles. And, or that is to say, the threshold of the runway was outside the inner core by about 2 miles. So no long downwinds, but we would have been fine. And then to get out of the 33-mile ring during a presidential TFR is actually really easy. I was reading the NOTAM, and all you have to have is either an IFR or VFR flight plan and a squawk code. And you have to be squawking that code from the time you turn the key until you are outside of the ring. And there's a couple other restrictions. You can't do practice approaches. You can't do flight training inside of the ring. Mm-hmm. But once you're outside of that, everything's golden. You're fine.
So do you get that ahead of time over a cell phone or something? Or
the TFR notification?
No, the squawk code and all that?
The squawk code, you can call in and pick it up that way, or you can pick it up from ground.
Okay.
So you can either turn on the radios, or if you have a handheld or some other mechanism, you can...
As long as you're not taxiing to the runway. I mean, you said before you turn the key, but I guess you could turn the key and sit there and idle.
I don't think anything bad would happen if you did that, especially at the airport that I fly out of, because we don't have ground radar.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that it is very similar to the SFRA, because it sounds almost exactly the same.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Since we have a permanent presidential TFR, the only difference is for us, when there is a presidential TFR, the only difference is we can't do the approaches and the student pilot, any of that stuff. But the way we do it is, as soon as your transponder goes from standby to anything else, you must have that code in there.
Mm.
And if you take off, you must be in ALT reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Because, mode C, yeah.
Yeah.
We're under the mode C veil anyway, so we have to have that.
But they're very, very picky about that.
And nowadays, didn't they change it to where even taxiing, you should be on ALT even before you get to the runway end?
It depends on the airport. If you when I was at Midway, they wanted a squawking altitude on the ground, because mm-hmm. they actually have radar that sweeps the ground there,
mm-hmm.
And so that they can manage traffic and all that kind of nifty stuff. On most other airports, they want you squawking standby.
Hmm. I don't know where I heard that from, or maybe it was something local out here to Deer Valley, and I don't fly out of Deer Valley too much anymore, but. Maybe it was for Deer Valley that they wanted you on ALT from the get-go now. I'll check into that.
Yeah, I know. It should say in the AFD.
Okay.
I know Martin State, they like you on standby because Martin State actually uses BWI's radar.
Mm.
Since it's close and covers the area anyway, so they don't want us interfering with all the other traffic and stuff like that.
Yeah, too much clutter.
Yeah, essentially.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you did get to get up and get another flight in for the commercial?
No, we didn't make it up. The my CFI chickened out.
Before that, I thought.
No, before that was just a fun flight. I haven't actually been able to do any commercial training because the aircraft the Mooney has issues with its oil pressure gauge. And it turns out that is an incredibly difficult thing to fix. It's the gauge. It's not the engine. We sent it to the mechanic and they verified it. And they started calling around trying to figure out how to troubleshoot the problem and how to fix the problem. And it turns out that our manual is the only manual that anybody has seen in a long time that has the part number for an M20J oil pressure gauge.
Huh.
And in fact, Mooney didn't know the part number. So we called Mooney and said, hey, we need one of these. And they're like, well, what part number is it? And they said, well, we're not sure. And they said, well, we're not sure either, because we don't have any manuals for that exact year of M20J.
And they're like, by the way, we just started up again.
Right.
Give us a minute.
Do you want to buy a new one?
That's right.
We lost all that, a year ago.
Yeah. So now Mooney has the part number, but they don't have the part. And so we have a replacement. We've placarded the gauge, the pressure gauge, off as it's placarded unreliable. And they've installed another oil pressure gauge. And I haven't seen it yet, but I believe they scraped the numbers off of the gauge because they don't represent, they're not certificated for those numbers. So there's just sort of a low, medium, high kind of thing. But it's enough to be legal to fly it, because you need the pressure gauge to fly it.
Wow, so very interesting.
So if you can't have the numbers, then and it's a different part number, how does that... Is there anything else you had to do to make it legal? Any type of certificate?
Hey, he's got low, medium,
STC?
And high.
I don't know if they had to get a special STC for it, or I don't... I'm very thankful that there was someone who was able to figure this out, and I'm really glad it wasn't me.
Well, here's where I'm thinking that what makes this oil pressure gauge so special that we can't get one off the shelf. I understand the certifications of oil pressure gauges, but one specifically for an M20J, it has to be?
Apparently, yes.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's what new ruling was all about, is making this a little easier.
The one that's in the M20K won't work.
There is no M20K, but not the one in the M20H or G.
Huh.
Yeah, I think the J, I don't know what is special about the J, to be honest with you. I don't know why it was such a mystery. I don't know why it was so difficult, but so that canceled several of my flight lessons. We've also had a bunch of student pilots join the club, and they're training like all the time. We have a CFI who is the kind of the main CFI for the club, and he's basically billing 40 hours a week of dual.
Mm.
Nice.
It's unbelievable. So it's been hard for me to get time, and then when I do get it, two or three times in a row, we couldn't go because the pressure gauge was acting up again. And now the pressure gauge is fine, but there's a TFR. So I've got to get
win.
I can't win. I've got to get a bunch more hours in, including two 100-mile dual VFR cross countries for the commercial certificate before I can take the check ride. And actually, I have to get them in before I am signed off. I need 7 hours to get signed off in the aircraft for insurance. So I want to take the plane and fly it down to Arkansas over spring break. And so I'm trying to get this all taken care of in the next couple of weeks. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Arkansas, that'll be a flight.
Yeah, it's 654 miles direct each way.
Wow.
God, I can't wait to do a flight like that.
Uh-huh.
I can't wait. I need to buy this airplane.
Get a fast one.
Well, no, that's... It's looking a lot like it's going to be the Cardinal.
That's fast enough. You get that wing strut out of there and they go a little speedier.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, speaking of fast planes and Moonies and stuff, my exciting news that I kind of mentioned too in the show notes was my buddy Franz ended up buying a plane. And so it looks like I'll be getting to fly a Mooney M20K. Brad, there is an M20K.
There is a K. Cool. I didn't know that.
M20K 231 Turbo.
Ooh.
1981.
Gentle on the throttle.
Yes. Nice. I cannot wait to be doing 200 miles an hour at flight level 200. It'll go, I think 25,000 feet is where it's maxed out at or whatever. It's got factory oxygen on it. It's got a hot prop.
It's, you can't fly at flight level 200.
No.
Unless Franz is a CFII.
Oh. we can't go up there? Well,
it's class A.
Once we're instrument rated and we have a flight plan.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's class A. You can't get there from here.
This will be our instrument test bed and our commercial, for that matter. But I'm so excited. I'll get my commercial and my high performance knocked out with this plane. It's in currently
and
in
your complex.
Billings, and my complex. What did I say?
You said high performance, but you'll get that too.
No, I think I said commercial and I meant to say complex.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, complex and high performance. It's up in Billings, Montana right now, and unfortunately there's about 18 to 20 inches of snow sitting on the ground everywhere, so he's having a little issue trying to get the pre-buy inspection out of the way. But if the snow goes away here pretty soon, they're going to get up there and get that done. And then he's going to go up there with friend of ours that we rent the Cessna from, his son, and go up there and bring it back. So it'll be exciting. It's, you know, it's one of those things where we're both going to have to get about 25 hours in it to kind of satisfy some insurance requirements to fly it solo and so forth, because we're both pretty low time pilots to be in a fairly high performance airplane like that. But needless to say, we're very excited. We keep thinking about all the different places that you know, we're going to be able to go and get to. Yes, that was one of them, as well as the Reno Air Races, because that's really close to us.
Yeah. I'd love to go there.
So we're really excited. I know Franz probably hasn't even slept in the last couple of days since he bought it. Got it off of eBay. So kind of an interesting story, actually. It's a 1981 Mooney M20K 231. The paint's like brand new. The interior's original. And the avionics are good, but they're not, you know, they don't have like an updated great Garmin 430 or 530, anything like that. It's got a Garmin 510 GPS yoke mounted, but that's about it. You know, physically it looks great, and it's only got 837 hours since a factory remanufactured engine got put in. So hours look good and times look good on it, and apparently the guy who owns it was ended up getting it because his business partner did something, owed him money, so he ended up getting this plane. It sounded like they kind of owned it together for the business, but then his business partner maybe did something shady or owed him money or whatever, so he ended up taking the plane as a whole, and he's not a pilot, so he just wanted to get rid of it. So Franz ended up getting this plane for $55,700.
Wow.
I think he made a decent deal.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now I want to buy a Mooney.
Not until you see the insurance quote.
Yeah, I know. There's so many reasons why I wouldn't do that right now, but the Mooney, when I was younger, I mean, that was the plane that I always looked at, and I was like, I want one of those. I didn't know much about airplanes, but I wanted one.
So speaking of that, he's been talking with a few different people about insurance and what to do about that, and he was thinking about having the guy that we rent the Cessna from just add it to his insurance piece and allowing him to use it to check out commercial people and people to get their complex and high performance endorsements and stuff like that. But that's about it, you know? And I think the insurance was going to run somewhere around $3,700 a year. Kind of steep.
Yeah. It's a lot of airplane.
It is a lot of airplane.
How much did you say again?
$3,700 a year for insurance.
Yeah.
Kind of pricey.
Plus, you're going to have to do, if you're doing training in it, you're going to have to do 100-hour inspections and all that good stuff.
Get all that goodies with it. So he just told me yesterday that he's been dealing with this one insurance broker who is friends with a couple of car guys that he knows. He's into cars. He's the one who sells the Ariel Atom. And so this guy he knows also races cars himself and underwrites at one of the insurance companies. And so he said he called in a favor and he got him a quote for $1,289 for the Mooney. And I was like, wow, that sure beats $3,700.
That's a lot better.
Of course, you know, that's private insurance, not a commercial type insurance, obviously. Right. So it should be a lot less, but that's, you know, certainly a lot easier to manage. So anyways, that being said, I'm stoked. I can't wait. It, you know, this is what we've been waiting for, is him to find a plane so we can go get our, you know, instrument rating in and something that goes fast and has some legs to it and, you know, doesn't burn a ton of gas. Although this one being a turbo is going to burn a little more than the standard Mooney that can, you know, do 155 or 60 knots at 10 gallons an hour. You know, this is going to do, I think, about 175 knots at about 12 to 13 gallons an hour or something like that. Because it does that at like 65%, I think he was saying.
Yeah, anyways. That's probably pretty true. You have to be high for that to happen, but yeah.
So I'm pumped. I can't wait for it to get there and get it back and go for my first ride in it. I'll definitely bring along the cameras.
Yeah, bring lots of them. That's awesome.
Yeah. We are pumped.
Man, that's one of the planes I got to find a way to fly someday.
Those are hard to find. Brad, you got the club that has a little bit of everything. You have a great club that has, you know, everything from basic trainers to, you know, severely complex airplanes, which is awesome. You have the type of club that if I was to build a club from scratch, your hangar is pretty much the type of planes that I would be trying to get. Do you guys have a twin?
We do not. There was
it's about the only thing that I'd
about
add.
No. 10, 15 years ago, a bunch of guys who were in the club bought a Seneca 2 together.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't owned by the club, but it was a bunch of club members co-owned a Seneca 2. And that was a pretty sweet deal, but it when the economy tanked, that was the end of that arrangement. But it is a great club in so many ways. We have a really devoted bunch of people that are running it. They do a really nice job. We're getting a new interior put into the Aero this year. So it's got a new windshield already, and then a new leather interior. That's going to be really nice.
Nice.
The only thing that plane will need then is paint. It does need some new paint, but that'll come in time. And we might, you know, we're still looking at getting another plane this year if membership continues to grow at the rate it has been. We might just pick up another aircraft to meet
down.
Demand. I don't think we'll get anything for Upside Down, but we'll probably if I were to bet, I would bet it'll be another Mooney.
Mm.
Sounds like you guys are, you know, always working on one airplane to upgrade at all times. You know, someone's getting worked on one way or the other.
Well, one way or the other, yeah. We with this many planes, we've got we do all our annuals in the winter for obvious reasons. The planes don't fly nearly as much in the mm-hmm. wintertime. And the annuals, because we put so many hours on, which we put about 2,000 hours a year on all the planes combined, and because they fly so much more than your typical, you know, GA single-engine plane that isn't being used for, you know, as a rental at a flight school, the annuals are pretty expensive, but that's all right. That's just kind of part of the deal. We don't buy really old planes for that reason, because the annuals would eat us alive.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have, I guess over the weekend, we had one of the Archers, someone landed it and it slid off the runway into a snowbank and the prop hit the snow. And so there's a question of whether or not we need to do a teardown, and there's a lot of care and feeding that, you know, somebody has to coordinate with a mechanic to go out and look at the thing and make a decision as to whether or not we want to do a teardown or not. And I'm really glad that we have a lot of very capable, hardworking people that put a lot of time in. You know, my time to make those kinds of contributions will come when I've got fewer obligations at home. But in the meantime, I'm very grateful for the team that we have that run the place, because it's a special thing, and you know, not everybody has that opportunity, and I'm grateful for the chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great club. There isn't, you know, as much flying as we can do around here. You would think there would just be, you know, a gazillion different types of clubs to join tonight. There's a handful, you know, there's four or five that I found, but none that I think is worth the money that they're asking for what they have to offer, unfortunately.
Maybe that means I'm supposed to start one myself. I don't know.
There you go.
Well, before you do that, find out why they're so expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just think for the amount of money per month and then what they charge to rent the plane, I don't know where the benefit of that is, you know. It'd be different if the amount they charge to rent the plane wasn't, you know, it's no more than what I'm paying. I'm already paying less than what some of them are. So it just, there's obviously no benefit other than maybe there's some other type of planes that you can get your hands on that they don't have.
Right.
Or that they have.
It really comes down to, like, there are some clubs up here in the cities that have SR-22s, and one of them has a full-motion Redbird simulator in the flying club.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice, but it's bloody expensive, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's finding the club that has the type of people that are going to fly, have similar flying profile than what you have, to what you have. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, then it's obviously it's not a good fit. It's like any partnership. You know, if you had a partner who wanted to go in on a plane and you both said, hey, we want this Mooney and he wants to put on, you know, radar and TCAS and, mm-hmm. you know, a storm scope and all these crazy avionics that you may or may not be interested in. You're like, hey, I'm kind of looking to do more of the $100 hamburger thing. Then it's it's the same problem.
Yeah, you got to definitely go into it with somebody who's got the same goals in mind. Otherwise, it's just never going to work out.
Yeah. So I'm glad so far with me and my buddy, it's very much we're looking for something we can just fly the pants off of for getting our IFR and just keeping currency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we both want to take the occasional weekend trips and be able to go somewhere. Which is the one thing that's really hard to do with renting right now is, you know, we can't go and take a plane for a weekend, economically. It's just impossible. I'm glad that we both kind of have the same idea. We're really looking at the same plane. We like the Cardinal seems to fit our mission right now. And
it is a great plane.
So build your own flying clubs.
Well, we've got some different topics that we haven't brought up recently. We usually end up just talking a lot about the different flying that we're doing. But seeing that's becoming a little bit less and less lately because we're doing these podcasts now every couple of weeks. Hopefully everybody likes them that way.
There's a solution to that.
Yeah.
We could fly more.
Yeah.
I'm working it.
I'm going to try and figure that out real soon.
I'm really working it.
But you know those the aviation e-brief email that you get, and then there's those polls.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking back at some of those. Some of them are pretty interesting. Like, you know, how many hours do you fly each month? And by like an overwhelming majority, it was like 5 hours or fewer. You know, which is a shame. You know, I totally fit into that category. One of the ones that I thought was really interesting was, does your spouse or significant other enjoy aviation?
Hmm.
And I was pretty surprised at the results. The options are, he or she allows me to fly, but has no interest in participating. He or she enjoys flying with me. No, he or she thinks I should stop flying. He or she would like to learn to fly, or he or she is trying to find a way to buy our own aircraft. And it's pretty much a dead heat. 44.35% to 44.12% is he or she allows me to fly but has no interest in participating to he or she enjoys flying with me. My wife is definitely in the he or she allows me to fly but has no interest in participating.
Yeah,
where do you guys?
Here.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm in the same camp.
She's gone up with me, and
what's the new bride think about this?
She's gone up with me. She's not terribly excited about it. So
doesn't get all Jones.
It's very
for it. It's
yeah.
So
it's very. Yeah. I'm more in the definitely in the she tolerates it camp. but she knows what she signed up for. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
she she said yes to my marriage proposal after knowing the aviation thing. So,
right.
You know, she knew. And she'll go with me. She's not terribly thrilled about it. And I've talked to her before about doing like a quick course. You know, one of her, actually my CFI, I mean, she went to high school with him. So she's good friends with him. So I was like, hey.
Good cheddar course.
Yeah, so I said, why don't you go up? Go out with Tim and just guess. And she's like, no, no. She wants nothing to do with actually touching the yoke. And
oh, that's my wife.
And we'll get to the diamond in a little bit, but the diamond has a stick, right?
Uh-huh.
She will not, under any circumstances, fly with me in the diamond because there is a stick between her legs.
Oh, my
gosh. And the fact that the stick is right there, and, you know, the yoke, at least, it's too close. And she just wants nothing to do with it.
Make sure she listens to that episode of Never Again where the guy gets his noise-canceling headset box jammed in behind the yoke and they fly up into IMC.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, play that one first, then go fly.
I haven't even heard that one. I've listened to, I thought all those, but that one doesn't sound familiar. I'm so envious of those that are in the he, she enjoys flying with me category, you know. I don't know. Maybe that happens over time. Just more and more going up is like, yeah, this is beautiful. I can't wait to go until the next time.
It depends. I mean, it depends on personalities and stuff. I mean, I know my wife, a lot of it's anxiety and stuff like that, and she's just not comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just a lot of anxiety there, and she gets car sick easy, so of course she gets air sick very easy. So it's a lot of that, you know.
Another one of the surveys was, and this is one that I tend to use a lot. Do you use flight following on VFR cross country flights? Now there's that you know, there's that certain camp that is just like, I don't know, for whatever reason, deathly afraid of the radio, afraid they're going to say the wrong thing or get told to do something they don't want to do. I don't know what it is or whatever, but you know, I personally enjoy the radio work as much as the flying. So I'm the one that's yes, always. I do VFR flight following on some sort of cross country. How about you guys?
I'll go first. Well, Brad, you obviously do a lot of IFR. I'm assuming too.
Yeah, it depends on the day. I'll go last.
For me, it's a lot of my flights are 30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, 10 minutes of that is in the Delta trying to get out of there. So I'm already talking to controllers and, you know, it's just by the time I get out and then I'm starting to think about where I'm going, I'm like, you know, it's just not, we're trying to fight over it.
Sure. If 30 minute flight.
Yeah. If I was going on longer flights, I think it would be very different.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing for me is it's kind of hard to number one, figure out who you're supposed to call. Because there's like 8 million frequencies for a Potomac approach. And obviously there's a main one and I could call them. The problem is trying to get in on that frequency is almost impossible a lot of times. So you're going to spend more time trying to get in contact with them and switching frequencies and all that stuff than you are actually getting meaningful flight following. And then if I'm flying out of somewhere like Fort Meade, you know, I'm in the SFRA, I'm already required to talk to them. So I'm basically getting flight following for free.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rare that I'll do it, but that's just because of my use case right now. When I start doing longer flights, it's going to be different. Definitely. So,
Brad, like he was talking about you doing IFR flights. Of course that won't count cause you're on with them all the time, but on those VFR cross countries.
Yeah. When I fly cross country, well, actually, so just backing up, if it's VMC, I always have that, and I'm flying somewhere that's not just tootling around, you know, doing the Bravo, Class Bravo tour. I've got the decision to make, do I fly at IFR or do I fly at VFR? And if there's any question about the weather, then I just file and that makes it easy. But if there isn't a question about the weather, I really have some decisions to make and it really comes down to how inconvenient it is going to be for me to get out of the away from the Bravo airspace on an IFR flight plan. If it's like the first nice day first nice VFR day after a long spate of unflyable IFR, like cold IFR, where you can't get up into it because of the ice. And every pilot is out there doing practice approaches. I will depart VFR. And generally on the days when I know that there's a lot of planes up there, that's when I'm certainly going to avail myself of flight following, because the Bravo airspace fills up and there's just a lot of traffic and you just can't see all of it. So that figures into it. If I file IFR on a VFR day and there's a lot of traffic, it's going to add a long time to my trip. 5 to 10 minutes easily is going to get tacked on just because they have to steer me away from other traffic. So that figures into the VFR IFR decision. If I'm flying VFR and it's a dead day because it's windy or it's turbulent or there is an overcast or the visibility's low and I know that there's not going to be a lot of other planes up in the air that day, then I will tend to not use flight following. I guess if the visibility is low, then I will tend to use it. But if the visibility is not low, but the conditions aren't ideal, so I know that there won't be a lot of other people up, then I might not. There are times when I'm just like, you know, I'm fine. I don't want to talk to anybody on the radio. Once I get away from the Delta airspace, just leave it, and I will just go. Then there's other days when for whatever reason, the mood strikes me, or I think that there's a lot of other traffic out there that I have to worry about, and then I'll activate flight following and go with it. So it's very situational.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long answer for a short question.
So what you're saying is that it depends.
Yeah, I'm a consultant. That's the answer that we're supposed to give.
Very good. Very good. Well, so there's a lot of these good polls out there, and it's on www.smartbrief.com/polls/transportation if you want to check them out and you're not getting the aviation e-brief email in your email daily. Seems like several times a day sometimes, but even though it's just daily, you can go there and check out the different polls if you'd like, and some of the answers polls are pretty interesting. Anyways, moving along, I'd throw it in this other article recently about FBI launches a campaign against laser pointers aimed at aircraft. has any of you guys ever been a victim of that?
I have not been a victim of it, but I saw this and I had a very good idea for it.
Did you? I have an idea for it. And the thing is that Phoenix is one of the areas that is like heavily hit by this, I guess. So we have quite a bit of it out here. Matter of fact, I know I've been up in the air specifically while it's happened, and I've been on the radio and hear people talking about it and like choppers flying around trying to find, you know, the person and stuff like that.
I've only ever been lit up once, and it was just for a fleeting second.
Mm.
Other people in the club have been on instrument approaches and been lit up and at night, and that's a really bad
day. Yeah, that's a real bad deal.
And so I can see why they're making such a huge deal about it, because it's funny. I went to a presentation put on by a local astronomer, and he was talking about they use laser pointers to point
out the constellations, right, and stuff. Yeah.
And so he's talking about his little laser pointer, and he's like, oh, you don't have to worry about it. You can point it at an airplane. Nothing bad's going to happen. And I took him aside. I took him aside afterwards, and I said,
why did you just endorse that?
Don't say that ever again, and don't ever do that. Yeah. I'll take you up sometime, and we'll find out why. And so he felt differently about it.
Wow.
Yeah, the one little time that it happened to me was just a fleeting instant, and it was actually before the big hubbub where the FAA had a reporting site and all that for being lit up by lasers.
Yeah. Well, the FBI is the one who's began this campaign, which I thought was interesting that it was the FBI, first of all. And then they're also providing a $10,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of someone doing that. So they're really making a big deal of it, which is good. And they've had several cases already where people have been fined and sentenced to prison for 6 months or longer, even in certain situations. So at least maybe if a few people are made examples out of, they thought it was pretty innocent and turned out that it was, more than that, maybe more people will, find out this ain't the brightest thing to do.
Yeah.
A friend of mine had he used to live right by one of the main VORs that's used to get aircraft in and out of Minneapolis, and his neighbor's teenage kid got one of these green pen lasers and was out lighting up aircraft because he was just being dumb. And, quite frankly, he just wasn't thinking about the consequences. Mm-hmm. And he got hauled away.
Oh, man.
Handcuffed and, you're
yeah
done.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a big deal. It would be kind for the manufacturers of those to put a warning on them saying, if you point this at an airplane, you're going to have a really hard time.
Yeah.
So expect to pay the penalty.
Yeah. I mean, this kid, he actually ended up lighting up the helicopter that was looking for him.
Oh, that helps.
Yeah. It made it really easy.
Well, that was funny. So, we're in middle of February. Had to be maybe 3 weeks ago, we had an event. We have an event at the church, and it's called GLOW. And basically what it is that we have a helicopter come in, and someone gets on board with like hundreds of thousands of glow sticks, and they fly over this field and just start dropping them all over the field. So it's just like streaming green piles of glow sticks coming out of a helicopter for several minutes. It's
How
really kind of cool.
How the heck does he fly with that inside of the... It must be in like black plastic bags or something.
Well, they're in a box, and they just keep chucking them out. And it's pretty cool. And then after he's done doing that, then all the kids run out there and grab him up and take off with him. And it's pretty cool. But before the event, this helicopter comes flying over and we're like, oh, he's early. And well, it turned out it wasn't him at all. It was a Phoenix PD helicopter. And some kid was lighting him up with a laser, so he was trying to hunt him down.
Wow.
So, yeah. So that was kind of interesting. Now, personally, myself, I fly with my own green laser pointer. I have one of these things that will shoot, miles
into
the sky.
You're ready.
Yeah.
You're the problem. Boy, that's got to be really hard for them to track down.
No.
I think this guy's at altitude.
If they fire at me, boom, I'm right back at him. And then I just circle. There they are. I'm pointing at them. So I've got it solved. Just bring your own. Fight fire with fire.
I saw this FBI campaign. I was like, man, 10 grand for finding them. I sent it to the other people's airplanes guys. And I said, hey, I found a way for us to fund our show.
That's right. Let's just cruise the town.
We can get all kinds of gear. Let's start.
What you do is you get into that Mooney or that Arrow and you or your 177 and you push the prop all the way forward so the tips are going supersonic, and you just fly low over the neighborhood until somebody comes out and lights you up just to get you to shut up and go away. And you're set.
Is that like those things they do on campus where they play like, Hanson as loud as they can and then charge you donations to shut it up?
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. Hey, it's a great way to raise fundraising money.
Well, if you're already deaf, yeah. Otherwise, you're stuck listening to Hanson.
Yeah, well.
Boo. Something else I noticed recently, it must be that time of year. We start getting those emails in from AirVenture telling us, who's
time.
Showing up. Right?
I know.
It's January, February. You already got to start thinking about what are you going to do at the end of July and August.
I've already got the plane reserved. There's four or five of our club planes are going to be at Oshkosh.
That's fantastic.
We started planning, and I actually have something to talk about that, possibly. But I'm still trying to get through Sun and Fun first.
Well, there's always that. Sure.
Yeah. But after that, I'm going to be. But yeah, I mean, I've... I've seen a couple of these come through, and this one definitely was the coolest I've seen so far, and I'm really glad because I love this thing. I love watching it fly. Well,
so what we're talking about here is the MV-22 Osprey, the tilt rotor. I have never seen one of these. Well, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say I have never seen one of these fly in real life. That's not true. I've actually seen them fly over me, you know, in town here. And I was like, whoa, you know, I was at work one day and it was on a weekend. It was Saturday and I was working the weekend and I hear this noise and I'm like, that's kind of an odd sounding airplane noise. What is it? So I actually walk out of the building. I look up and there's two Ospreys in formation, like heading up north. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Got a couple of pictures. I had my camera with me, of course. But yeah, the Osprey's coming to Oshkosh. Now it says here in the article that they were there in 2010. I wasn't there.
That is correct. They were there. I remember seeing it. I actually have some pictures of it and they flew it there too. It was pretty cool.
Wait a minute. 2010.
You were there. You might not have been there yet.
Yeah, that was my first year there. Actually,
I don't,
cause this will be my fourth year.
You saw it. I don't think you saw it fly.
You were there in 2011 then, if this is going to be your fourth year. 11, 12, 13, 14.
Yep, you're right. I wasn't there then. I'm good with the math.
Is that the year so I was Pumai?
That was Slosh. 2010 was Slosh Kosh.
No, 2009. No, yeah, you're right.
No, it was 2010. So,
yeah, I wasn't there.
I was there. I don't remember seeing the Osprey, but I did see them at the St. Cloud Air Show in 2011. And I was blown away by how small they are on the inside.
Yeah.
I mean, they carry about a dozen people.
Yeah, that's it.
Something like that.
They carry like 12 people, and there's not a lot of room.
Mm-hmm. Amazing aircraft. Have you seen the commercial versions that they're trying to make? Who's the company
that's
trying?
It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I just saw a picture of it the other – maybe it was today even.
I mean, the original intent for this was to be a commercial thing because they wanted it so they could get in and out of cities and then fly it like an airplane. And then they realized that it wasn't good for that at all.
Yeah.
And it was a horrible idea.
Do you remember the videos of the autogyros that were going to take, that they were going to use to deliver mail? And they actually did a video in the 50s of an autogyro departing off of the roof of the New York post office. And it would fly out and somehow this was going to work.
Yeah. You know, that sounds like some other company I think recently did that. Maybe a giant shipping company, Amazon,
yeah.
Something.
And Amazon,
something like
that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they wanted to
shrunk
drones,
it down a little bit.
Only the Amazon version was even less feasible.
Nobody will have an issue with us flying these quadricopters everywhere.
And the wind is never greater than 2 knots.
Well, so that brings up, did you guys see the commercial or something about the drones that were delivering beer to the ice fishers?
Yeah, that was out here.
Right? Now,
it was a total spoof, too.
Well, I kind of figured that, but then the FAA really said, no, you can't do that, right?
Right.
But what airspace are they in at that point?
It doesn't matter. Commercial drone, you're not allowed to fly commercial with drones. They have busted
right.
A lot, and I mean a lot, of guys saying, hey, I'll do photography with it. And it's totally illegal.
Even on some websites like B&H Photo, and they actually sell that quadricopter with the gimbal setup and whatnot. You know, they're selling it for you to do that with.
Yes, but you can do it for yourself.
Right.
Right. That's like you can fly, you can expense your flight Part 91. Or, you know, UPS and FedEx fly Part 91.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so it's not commercial flying.
I was, yesterday I was watching day one of the Photoshop week. It's the online live event where they got all these Photoshop gurus. And there was a guy talking about, oh, I love my quadcopter, blah, 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 for this or that. I'm like, oh, dude, that's illegal. You can't do that because obviously he's taking photos to sell them. That's his livelihood.
Right. Yeah. And that's where you get into trouble. Now the beer delivery drone was particularly funny because there isn't a quadricopter out there that can lift up a six pack of beer.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think it was actually a 12th pack, even, but right. That's
six
a lot
packs,
of weight.
Six packs I feel like you could do, though, because if you've got these guys that are literally hanging DSLRs off the quadcopters.
Yeah.
And well, that's not a little bit of weight.
Yeah, and some of these are octocopters.
Well, yeah,
too.
Some of them, a lot of them are. And especially the ones you're seeing on B&H Photo. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would love to have some of those just to get some shots of just get a little higher, mm-hmm. Than you can mm-hmm. with a tripod or a monopod or something. That'd be pretty cool. But
yeah. But the funny part, of course, is that it's not exactly difficult to get to an ice fishing shanty.
Yeah.
You get on a snowmobile, there's nothing between the shore and the shanty. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not like they're out in the, if they were delivering them to deer stands.
How bad do you hate your wife to go ice fishing? We go outside and sit on this block of ice for umpteen hours in a shed.
You do not understand what it is like. It's not a function of your wife or anything like that. It's like, I can't get outside the house, right? Because if I stand outside the house for very long, like I had to chisel ice off of my front step so I could open the door. Oh. and my fingers almost got frostbit.
Yeah.
And it was 10 minutes and I was wearing gloves. So
the ice
shanty is, it fills a need. It keeps the homicide rate down. I will say, however, I have never been ice fishing ever.
No, me neither. Anyways, the tilt rotor, one of my favorite aircraft. I plan on being there this year. I've got so many other things going on. We just decided to do an Alaskan cruise, as I was mentioning before we started, and so there's something else to add to the amount of time off I get to take from work and stuff like that. So plans are to make it. I really would love to see this thing in action, and they plan on doing a full demo with it.
Yeah, you better be there.
I know, man.
I need all the help I can get with this stuff. I'm booked.
Yeah, I don't even know that you've actually saw Oshkosh as far as I know. You just run around and, edit video and edit audio.
Last year was a little ridiculous, and I think me and Damon both, we kind of decided last year was a little excessive in how much time we did actually spend editing. And mm-hmm. We're getting a lot quicker at it, and we're starting to implement some stuff that should allow us to actually get out there more.
Figured out how to script it.
Not just that, it's really just simplify where we can, especially in a lot of the technical stuff. And then it should allow us to get episodes out quicker. And at the same time, hopefully get us out filming a little bit more too, so that we can see some of the show. Because at least if we go out and film, we get to walk around, we get to see stuff and all that kind of thing. So I'd like to see a little bit more, and we're definitely going to make that happen. So it's going to be cool. Actually, Sun and Fun is going to be a huge test bed for us, and I'm really looking forward to it. So anybody else? I know somebody sent a message to us, and I forget where, saying they were going to be at Sun and Fun. Sadly, they were going to be there the one day that I'm leaving. I'm leaving on Saturday morning because I have to come home. But I will be there from Sun on Sunday until Saturday of the week of Sun and Fun. So, I'll mention it. And if anybody wants to meet up or hang out or anything, just, send me a tweet or something like that. And at Pilot Conway. And be sure to meet up, because it looks like I'll yet again be the only ITP representative down there. Y'all need to figure that out, Mr. Mooney.
A little far east, even for the Mooney, man. That's two refuels.
Well, you can make it to Arkansas. It's not that much further, right?
I can do it in two hops from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's about what it'd be for the 231, I think.
But
so, anyways, I think we should move on to some. Shoutouts?
Ish, yeah. I got one thing coming up.
Yes.
I want to mention this.
Yes.
Not before the next episode, maybe the one after that, or I'm not sure yet. It's a matter of the weather. I've been watching it closely. part of the reason why I haven't been flying yet is because I have decided my next flight is not going to be just to take somebody up flight. I talked to my flight instructor, and I was bouncing some stuff off him, and I'm officially, my next flight is going to be the Diamond Checkout.
Woot.
Nice. Very nice.
This is the DA-20, and I've already started looking over the POH, which I love that they put it online, so you just go download the PDF of the POH. I mean, it's, you know, no spending $30-$50, whatever it is, for like the 172 for the P model. You know, it's just go online, you can get the POH. So I started studying that, and that's the next thing. So I'm going to take some cameras with me, and we're going to go up, do the checkout. It also sounds like we are going to do some spins, possibly.
Ooh.
If things work out. So that's next for me. I'm doing it. I'm going for a low wing. And
you'll never go back.
We'll see about that. I mean, I like being able to see the ground occasionally. But I'm excited. It's going to be a new airplane, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So that is what's next for me, and it's a matter now of just finding my problem has been February being the short month that it is means there isn't a whole lot of hours, and since I get paid by the hour, I've had a hard time trying to take off. So it wasn't going to happen, because really, for me, during the week is the best time. So it's...
Well, we'll be looking forward to hearing the feedback about what you think about that plane, and getting a chance at a plane with a real stick in it.
I know, it's a low wing, and it's a stick, and it's a bubble canopy. I mean, there's so many things about it that are just going to be so much different. So I'm looking forward to it. The weird thing so far I've seen is the flaps. Because there's like cruise and like landing.
That's so, not too difficult.
Yeah, it's... It's a different airplane. It's got a hull temperature sensor on it. So you can't fly if the hull is hotter than 55 degrees Celsius.
Right.
Wow. And you would want to. Why?
Yeah, I know, right? So if
it just depends on how you feel about structural integrity.
Yeah.
And heat stroke.
But it's funny because I'm looking over the checklist, and that's the first thing on the interior checklist is if it's over 100 degrees, you have to check the temperature sensor behind the seat.
Wow.
So it's
well, that greenhouse that that you're sitting inside, yeah, that's why they've made those nice shades that roll up and over, you know, for those things.
So it's going to be cool. I'm excited about it, and we'll get some good video of that, hopefully. I don't have a whole lot of cameras here, so we'll see. It might be an iPad, an iPhone, and a GoPro.
All of it.
I'm going to put up as much as I can, as much as I can fit in a 2-person Diamond. We'll see.
Yeah,
there's not a ton of room in there.
Yeah, there really isn't.
Is it pretty much a shoulder to shoulder plane?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
there's not a whole lot behind you either. So, so that's next for me, and that's I just wanted to mention that real quick because I don't know when it's going to happen. It's like I said, it's up to the weather and when I can get some time off work to go do it. But it should be an hour on the ground, 2 hours in the air, and I'm done. And the advantages to that is it's cheaper. It's only $125 an hour.
Wow, that's not bad.
Yeah, and it's a little faster than the 172.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. It's carbon fiber. I mean, it's all carbon fiber and everything. So it's a little lighter. It's a little sleeker. You know,
it's a lot cleaner.
It's a lot cleaner, and it's got a huge wingspan on that thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's the part that you'll find freakishly weird.
Yeah,
it's almost motor glider.
It was a motor glider.
Well, the Diamond Katana before it, right?
Right.
Was called a motor glider, right? And then Diamond changed it to a DA-20, but it's essentially the same plane, isn't it?
It's the same plane. Yeah, yeah. And it used to have a smaller engine in it, and it was a motor. Uh-huh. It was considered a motor glider.
Yeah.
Right. Did it just have like 100 horse on it to start with?
Something tiny. It was just enough to drag it up off the ground. But the wings are so long that they won't fit into a lot of hangars.
No.
We do have it hangered out here. I don't know where they found the hangar for it, but I'm excited. It's gonna be cool. And then I might for Oshkosh, I might get the chance to actually take an airplane and use it for its intended purpose of going somewhere. and flying to Oshkosh, but
I was going to say, how would Chris get there then?
I might actually pick up Damon from wherever he is in probably somewhere around this area. So instead of us trying to meet up and stuff, I might rent one of the planes, fly up, pick him up, fly him back to here, and then we'll drive from here. Because we priced it. It's well out of the realm of possibility to actually fly.
it's not something cheap.
It's not. It's like $3,000 for us to take the 172.
Oh, yikes.
$3,400, something like that, when you take the hourly cost into account plus the minimum.
The minimum is what's going to kill you.
Yeah. So it's just prohibitively expensive.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Speaking of planes that we're flying, the Cessna that I've been renting over at Glendale just got a nice little upgrade. It just got out of its 100-hour inspection and everything, and everything came back good, and they added a nice little Garmin 530 to it. So that'll be exciting to continue renting that for a little while we're, getting familiar with the Mooney after it gets back.
Cool.
Will be nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to, we're talking about putting ADS-B in one of our planes, in and out. That might be the Mooney because it already has a WASP GPS in it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Otherwise, we'd have to throw a WASP GPS in.
It's got a 430 WASP. G430W?
It's got the 530W in it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That big screen on that 530 is pretty nice.
Yeah, and we're starting to think about, we've got 6 years left before we have to put ADS-B out in all of the planes. And I think for all of the planes that have I don't know how we're going to do it. I guess we're going to have to put a 430 or some GPS into the Warrior, which currently doesn't have any, because we'll have to have a WASP GPS in all of the planes in order to get ADS-B out. And if we're going to do that, we might as well get ADS-B in at the same time.
Yeah, you might as well. There's no reason not to.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little bit more money, but if you're already going to have to spend it, just to let other people know where you're at, you might as well know where they're at the same time.
Yeah, and the prices on those units are starting to fall already.
Yeah.
It was $10,000, and it's now down to about $3,500 for in and out.
Yeah. And five more years. I mean, the expensive part's going to be probably the install, right?
I don't even think the install's bad.
Well, if you've already got a 430 or 530 or something to hook it up to, it probably can't be that bad, right?
Right. There's a new antenna that they have to add in to push out the signal. And but the rest of it is basically just a box and wiring it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that there's a firmware upgrade for the 430 or 530.
Yeah,
and obviously it has to be WAS. And if you don't have a WAS one, that's a fairly spendy upgrade to go from a non-WAS 430 or 530 to a WAS, because that's another antenna that has to get strung in.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh well. But hopefully the prices will continue to fall, and we're not going to rush in 6 years out to try to equip the fleet, but we might. We might do the one plane that we have that it would be fairly cheap to get ADS-B in and out. That machine, the Mooney already has a MODES transponder in it with traffic. And so we already have traffic in that airplane if you're at above about, if you're in radar contact, basically. But it would be nice to get the ADS-B traffic as well. So anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah.
More toys, more upgrades.
Boys and their toys.
Yeah.
You can't put too much avionics in a plane for me.
Oh, wait till you own.
Oh, I know, right? And then you have to repair one of them.
We have last quarter, put this into perspective, we put $8,000 of avionics repairs into the Mooney.
Oh my gosh.
And we have nothing new in it as a result.
Yeah.
That's before the oil pressure gauge, which has got to be costing us $3,000 or $4,000 at this point.
It just makes you want to throw up a little bit in your mouth when you're talking about a stupid gauge to get replaced for $3,000.
Well, we knew it was the gauge. You know, yeah. It's like trying to get it operational, checking the wiring to make sure it's not that. You know, all of this just piddly little drawn out stuff of like, oh, it's working now. Okay, we're good. And fly it again for a week. And then, nope, pressure gauge spiked again. You know, well, take it off line. Can't fly the plane. It's not generating revenue for the club. You know, yeah, that I'm learning a lot about aircraft ownership. The more I talk to the people who are actually running the club, the more I'm learning about it. You know, the $8,000 annual, you know, we fly a lot, so the planes get worn out and annuals are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
You've been keeping up on the Airplane Owners podcast too, right?
Yep.
That's great. I've been loving that.
Yeah.
And props to those guys.
And it is great. And it's a different kind of ownership than the flying club thing.
Yeah.
You know, again, because it's one person, you can kind of trick it out the way you want. And you can also kind of tailor your flying a bit more. Whereas when we've got 70 or 80 people flying, it's a very different deal. You know, that not everybody's going to lean the mixture out, maybe at all, or maybe they don't lean it out on the taxiway.
Right.
Whereas if you owned your plane, you would always do it. You would know exactly how much to lean it, and you would lean it every single time because you don't want to deal with the fouled plugs.
Yeah.
So it, you know, not everybody leans out at altitude. So they're, you know, just throwing gas out, unburned out the exhaust. yeah. Not everybody lands very well because they probably don't land more than a few times a year. And so they're, you know, hard on the brakes and they're hard on the, you know, it goes on and on. So it's a different kind of ownership, right? Our annuals are expensive because the planes fly a lot.
It takes me a while to get used to flying somewhere else because I don't even start the plane with a full mixture. I'm already leaned back a little bit every time.
Right.
But right. I'm at 1500 feet on the ground. So
whereas up here, you know, we're at 860 feet, but we're doing everything we can to richen the mixture. You know, you're throwing on the carb heat, throwing on the mixture's full rich, everything you can do to get to make the mixture rich just to get the thing to fire. And then you're leaning it way out so that you can get it hot.
Yeah. Sam, especially in the summertime, and we've already got density altitude to deal with and the heat. So
yeah. Whereas I was flying the Aero the other day. And I couldn't get the oil temperature above 104 degrees.
Wow.
I mean, I leaned it as hard as I could lean it, you know, and then we keep ours 50 degrees rich a peak because most of our planes are carbureted. And that's just what we do. As our policy, we fly 50 degrees rich a peak. So I get it 50 degrees rich a peak, and I'm like, it's 104 degrees on the oil temperature. It's just barely in the green, and I'm at cruise.
Yeah, that's, you know, in those winter mornings when you're sitting there taxiing and you get up there and you're ready to do the run up, but your oil temperature is not even ready, you know,
right.
You're like, man,
yep.
You got to sit there and burn all this gas just so you can get to the run up portion of your flight. You know,
that said, when I flew out to Eau Claire, I was departing on their 8,000 foot runway doing an intersection departure. So I only had 7,300 feet of runway in front of me. It was 4 degrees. I took off in 600 feet and I flew out of the class Delta before I reached the end of the runway.
What?
I climbed out of the top of the class Delta.
Wow.
Before I had gone
That's impressive.
A mile and a half.
Nice.
It's like, wow, 1800 feet per minute climb. This will do.
Yes. This will do nicely.
All right. Enough stories.
Let's wrap this up. I got to get to
Before
bed.
Or John has to edit this podcast.
Yeah, I've got 3 days to do it too. So let's and video to release.
Yeah.
Wait, we're shooting video?
No. Not you guys.
Yeah.
All the other work I do. You know I'm busy.
Yeah.
I can't be stagnant.
Now the Tora videos is amazing. I can't wait to see the full thing.
Neither can I.
and you have all the footage.
Oh, I have I have all the footage, and I have been okay.
Is it going to be a half an hour long?
No. If it is, I'll be surprised. I don't know how long it's going to be. This is actually part of my shout out, so we'll just roll into that.
Shout outs.
It's the Tora stuff that other people's airplanes. We recorded at Oshkosh 2013. And we got cameras all over these replica Zeros and on the ground at the pyro line, and we had cameras everywhere. And so the teaser has already been released. It's a short little 40-second teaser. That's on the Other People's Airplanes YouTube page. Should be a link in the show notes. And we're working on a let me see. I think it's a 2-minute, and I can actually tell you. Right now, it's just shy of 2 minutes. 1 minute, 56 seconds, and 16 frames, if you really care. And that is actually right now, that's going through some... I'm a developer, so we're calling it a release candidate. It's a release candidate, too, right now. And it's almost done. That's actually going to be released on Other People's Airplanes' 50th episode. Which will be coming out sometime in the next week or two. But the trailer will be in that episode. It'll also be released separately. And then probably the goal right now is sometime around Sun and Fun to have the full episode released. It might be during Sun and Fun. It might be a preview during Sun and Fun. I honestly don't know yet. It depends on how far I can get because I actually am starting work on that now that I have the trailer wrapping up. So. I've been looking through, we have a ton of footage. It is fantastic. It's so cool. Like just all of the different views in cockpit on the ground.
The in cockpit's ridiculous.
I could watch the in cockpit all day. I mean, it is just great.
I know. Watch these guys roll over the top and then pull through. Yeah. And it's just amazing.
Yeah. So my shout out is really just keep an eye out for that. Lots of stuff coming. We're really trying to do, essentially what we're doing with this podcast, and that is release a little more, regularly. So once every other week, something like that. So, stay tuned for that. Go check that out and check out what we got so far. And then, again, Sun and Fun. If you're going to be there, let us know. And, We're getting into the final month here. I leave on March 31st to head down there. So actually take off 5 minutes before my wife, who's going to Vegas. So I'll be down there for the week until Saturday. Leaving early Saturday morning, so I really won't be there on Saturday. But say hi and pay attention to the feeds because we're gonna have some content coming out of there. I might see if we can get a Skype connection to some of you guys while we're down there. We'll see if that works out.
Yeah, give it a try.
If not, I've got plenty of people that will be down there that we can get on here and start talking. So,
I don't think I want to talk to anybody in Florida. Actually, I'll be in Arkansas anyway, so I don't even know if they have internet there.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Maybe a modem.
Right.
So
I'll send you down with a nice Zircon PCMCIA adapter for your laptop.
Oh god.
I think I have an acoustic coupler sitting around someplace.
Oh, classic. Now all you need to do is find a phone that might work with. I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure they have phones.
Yeah. I got a shout out. My shout out is to one of our fans, Mark Stotesbury. And Mark shot me an email the other day, actually commented on one of my videos and then shot me an email over. He said that discovered our podcast somehow. It was a fluke, really, that I did, he said. I just followed up on the name of the podcast I saw somewhere. We must be advertising in many different places, I guess.
Yeah. What is our marketing budget?
He says he's an old fan of the Pilot Cast when it was around, and then on to Uncontrolled Airspace, and even met that gang at Oshkosh in 2009. The funny thing is that Mark has 150 hours in flying that 172 that I fly out of Glendale. And Lucas, who's the guy who checked me out on it, was his instructor, clear through, you know, getting all of his hours towards his IFR ticket. And so anyways, a local pilot here that, has flown the same airplane that I've flown, which is pretty interesting. He's a retired Air Force guy, worked on fighters for like 22 years, and now he's a postal carrier. And get this, so his postal route is just a little bit north of Glendale, where I fly out of. He listens to his transceiver each and every day. So as aircraft call in on approach and whatever, you know, they're that are right around him, he can hear them. So that's pretty cool. So anyways, shout out to Mark. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Thanks for watching my YouTube videos. And maybe we can hook up sometime and go take 811 out for a flight together.
Brad, you got anything?
Just two things. One was a shout out to my local IMC club here in the Twin Cities. Really have enjoyed making those meetings, and looking forward to the next one. And they meet every month, and instrument pilots get together and kind of talk about what they're doing. And right now we're talking about how we're surviving the winter and what we're planning to do to all get current again. And the other shout out was to the board of directors that we just elected to the flying club at Club Cherokee. Great bunch of folks, and really looking forward to working with everybody this year. So that's it for me.
Cool. I actually forgot one that I wanted to mention real quick, and that's
too late. You missed your chance.
Sorry.
Maybe next time.
Hey, I added one in for Chris that was in the end of the episode, so like in the out of the outro. I almost missed that too, by the way. Martin's Aviation on Twitter. I wanted to shout out to him because he just recently got his private pilot. So woo-hoo. Huge shout out to you, because I know he was nice. Talking about I was talking to him and online, and he's in looks like he's in high school, and that's pretty awesome. So keep at it, good job, and congratulations on that.
Excellent, good work.
So everybody can let us know about how awesome or badly we are doing.
I think we just did shout outs to all of our listeners. Who else is going to tell us?
Oh. We covered both of them. Shoot.
Right.
But if they did want to get a hold of us.
If they wanted
us,
to.
What if they did?
Chris.
How
would they contact you? How do we tell you how awesome you are at being a podcaster?
Well, if you would like to converse with me by way of the intertubes, you could send me an email over at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com. You could find me on the Twitterverse at CHOLUBAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ, as well as if you want to see a in-flight video of me doing that pilot thing, you can find me on the YouTubes at that same CHOLUBAZ.
Brad, how would one tell you about how it's not cold where they are?
Oh, you can shout at me on the internet via email, brad@inthepatternpodcast.com. Via the Twitterverse, I'm Brad Kane. Diaspora, bkane@diaspora.kane.com, and diaspora is not spelled any particularly fun way. Kane is spelled Kilo Oscar Echo Hotel November. Kane, just like it sounds.
Cool. And for me, you can reach me at john@inthepatternpodcast.com. You can reach me on Twitter, app.net, pretty much anywhere else, at Pilot Conway. If you want to see the videos from other people's airplanes, that's at FlyOPA. For all of us, you want to blanketly talk to all of us, you can reach us all at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com. Our website is inthepatternpodcast.com. We're also on Twitter and Google Plus is In The Pattern. Or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/inthepatternpodcast. If you'd like any updates on new episodes, you can go ahead and subscribe to our mailing list. It's on our homepage on the right-hand side. We won't use your information for anything other than just new episode updates and occasional blog posts. So please send us any suggestions, comments, critiques, and we'd love to hear feedback from you. So with that, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode 36, the In The Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
So, you know, with you guys working on your instruments ratings, you're going to have to change your tagline to, you know, cleared ILS 27 approach.
I got to buy the airplane first.